Hi everybody, hope you're having a great day so far. Before you start today's episode, I just want to give you a small reminder to hit that subscribe button wherever it is that you're listening to today's podcast. And also, if you have the time, if you could feel free to leave us a review, that would help us out tremendously. There are some weird podcast algorithms that are out there. Too scientific for me to comprehend or explain, but it would help us out tremendously if you did that. Thanks for listening to the Northern Nerd Podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Wild Atlas Travels. Rhonda at wildatlastravels.com takes the stress away from your travel planning. You know, you got enough stuff to worry about when it comes to packing your bag, making sure you have everything. There's always something you seem to forget, but Rhonda at Wild Atlas Travels makes sure you have your trip all set and ready to go. She helped us plan our trip out to Oregon at the beginning of the summer, made sure we hit up all the natural hiking spots that we wanted to because that was a priority, but we also wanted to make sure that we were hitting up the great restaurants and things like that to make our trip more enjoyable as well. My wife and I are big foodies, so we always try to make that a big part of our trip as well. And so Rhonda did a great job of planning our West Coast trip, and she's going to do a great job of planning your trip as well. So make sure you check her out on Instagram at Wild Atlas Travels or visit her website to get your travel journey started at wildatlastravels.com. My guest today is Carl Azuz, and he's here to talk about his new show, The World from A to Z with Carl Azuz. Now, I was first introduced to Carl Azuz back in middle school in Ms. Schmidt's class, where she would show us CNN student news, and Carl was always there to present the news and also include his famous puns. He's a very punny guy, and you'll see that shine through throughout this episode as well. Brings a great energy to the podcast. Also, talking about the importance of students having civil discussions based on the topics that are covered throughout his show. What I really like about Carl and his mission with The World from A to Z is that it's a nonpartisan show. So you're going to get both sides. You're not going to get like a left-leaning show or a right-leaning show. You're going to get the facts, the information, and see it from all perspectives. And I think that's important for students to be consuming something that's not trying to swing them a certain way. It's just presenting them the information. And we also talked about, you know, how he handles delivering difficult news, because it's important to have conversations about those tough topics, but there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. And he talks about how he juggles that, especially when it comes to giving news to middle school and high school age students. And towards the end of the show, I made a pretty good pitch, I think, to try to get him to come to Wisconsin. So we'll see if we get him here to enjoy a good old fashioned Wisconsin fish fry. But here's today's show with my guest, Carl Azuz. Me is very excited about this, but also seventh grade me is very pumped about this as well.
That's awesome to hear, because like one blessing of having done this for like, I think I'm about to start my 17th year on the air doing a student newscast is if I go out in public, it's not just people who are in class now at middle school or high school who are like, oh, there's a dude we have to watch in class. It's folks who are like in their mid to late 20s who remember back from the student news days and that sort of thing. So I think that's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. My seventh grade geography teacher, Ms. Schmidt, would always play your show and everything like that. So that's where I was first introduced to you and everything. And yeah, that was just great.
And that's fantastic. Do you know if she's still teaching?
She is.
That's great. That's awesome to hear. I mean, that's such a cool thing for me too. And I mean, it's like, it's come full circle so many times, like, you know, between my old schools, like asking for shout out schools I attended, to teachers I remember who were like, well, do you remember me? I'm like, sure, I remember you, dude. You taught me PE, yo. And so like, it's been such a fun thing about this unique kind of niche I found myself working in.
Yeah, definitely. So shout out to Mr. Schmidt for making that happen.
Was it Mr. or Mrs. Schmidt?
Mrs. Schmidt.
Mrs. Schmidt. All right. Mrs. Schmidt. German for Smith. Fantastic.
Yes. So Carl, thanks for coming on the show. Really excited to have you on. And can you tell us about your new show and what teachers and students can expect from it?
Well, thank you so much for having me on your show. We've got a Northern nerd and a Southern nerd like collaborating for this. So I'm excited to be here and excited to be hanging out with you. As far as the new show goes, it's called The World from A to Z. We have had 1 year on the air, so it's still a new program as far as news shows go. It's roughly 9 to 10 minutes. We promised at least nine, but I spent so long with CNN Student News and CNN 10 that it like sometimes drifts toward the 10 minute mark, and I'm like, old habits die hard. But it is a very fast-paced international show that is strictly nonpartisan. So when we cover some of the stories of political controversy, geopolitics, international controversies, that sort of thing, I don't want to take sides. I don't want to judge sides. I want to distill it to just the facts. And then if we bring in different perspectives, present those in a way that doesn't judge them or indicate whatever, worthless opinion I might have on the topic. That's not what it's about. It's about the facts and it's about an objective presentation. As I said, it's fast-paced, it's international. We like a lot of international stories, cultural stories, places you might not have been. I think our very first show for the second season that launches on Monday, August 12th, has a story. It opens with a story out of Kyrgyzstan. And that's one thing we're planning. And just to show, a slice of life from a place many Americans have never been. And to, even if you're really up to speed on the news, we hope that when you watch The World from A to Z, there's still something you haven't heard about before. There's something you can learn from every single show. And in addition to that, it's got those horrible puns that are part of my punsonality, and I love to torture my audience with at the end when appropriate. When we cover a variety of news stories to show students the news isn't just politics, gloom and doom, missing planes, wars, and that sort of thing. Sometimes it's a terrier that can't stop sneezing, and doggone it, I'm gonna make some puns.
Well, definitely. You got one in right there. Yes, appreciate it. Where
You'd
did you get
expect
your
nothing less.
yes? Where did you get your like sense of humor from? It was it a family member or things like that, or?
I've always had a really, I think, kind of eighth grade base level sense of humor. I remember making dad jokes long before I was capable of being a dad. But it was one of those things. I think in high school, I was cast in a couple plays, and that we had a choice to take speech or drama. And I was like, well, I mean, you're gonna do speeches in drama anyway, so I'll just do that one. And it turned into something that was really beneficial to me later in life. But I was cast in a few plays, and what that helped me do is kind of come out of my shell. I don't mean when I was on stage. I mean like when I was just hanging out with my friends, I was more confident in who I was. If you can stand up and talk in front of 300 people, you can certainly have a good time in front of three. And I found myself, just kind of just being more comfortable in my own skin and making absolutely horrible jokes, but clean ones. And throughout high school, throughout college, I was always writing. It was like either bad poetry or bad raps. But one thing I never thought was that one day they would come full circle to be where I would be writing bad pun raps as part of my job on air. But amazing how that training, I'd be bored in a college lecture, and so I'd start writing some ghastly, rap. My notebook. And years later, here I am writing news, and I'm finding puns that can rhyme, and so I'm just like, let's go for it. So that's been a lot of fun, and certainly an unexpected full circle moment on the arc of my career.
Definitely. Yeah, if you still have like those notebooks to be able to look back and be like, all right, yeah, maybe we can go
Oh,
with that.
he should have been burned long ago, brother.
So getting back to the news side of things, why is it important for students to understand the news and to be informed?
Well, their world is so vastly different from the one that I grew up in. I mean, they have so much information coming at them all the time, through social media, through internet, through whatever they're consuming online. And a lot of that, sometimes you go to TikTok and you hear people talking about current events, and sometimes these folks might not be affiliated with any news organization, and they're very good. But a lot of times it's folks opining or presenting opinion as facts. And sometimes we see people presenting theory as fact, even on the news itself. And so, because we have these conditions where there's this incredible flow of information, but it's not always reliable information, because we live in a country that is more divided. I mean, as far as I know, in my lifetime, I haven't seen ideological and political division like we see today. It's so important for us to have a program like The World from A to Z that is distilling the facts, that is giving them the major schools of thought when it comes to perspectives, opinions on those facts, but does so in a way that A, doesn't share my own, and B, doesn't judge those different opinions. We want students to be able to see this show, to understand what's going on and why it's making news, to hear some of the different perspectives on those stories, but hopefully to have some of the tools they need to be able to have a discussion themselves, and hopefully a civil discussion where it's not like 98% of the class barking at the 2% that disagrees, but to be able to say, look, you know, most of us might feel one way, you might feel another, but at least I understand where you're coming from. If we can have a program that can encourage some of that civility and compromise and dialogue that we used to see more often in the country, I think it's better for all of us all around.
Yeah, definitely. And like to set that foundation for that on your show is really important too. And not to have like, just like, I don't know, sometimes you have like those talking head shows where it's just like, just yelling at each other and things like that, whether it's politics or even sports, they really get heated about things. But to model that civility and everything like that really sets a good example for students to continue that discussion after watching The World from A to Z with you, and then have those discussions in the classroom, maybe some breakout groups or things like that, and really talk about the issues at hand. So I think that's great that you're providing that platform for it, where those further discussions can happen.
I couldn't agree more. And one of the greatest compliments, you know, we can get from a parent is my kid watched your show in school and now is able to converse about the news at the dinner table. Or if a teacher says, you guys handled this controversial topic in a way that was just the facts and in a way that my class could then use it as you said, as a jumping off point for discussion. That's like music to our ears, because as I said, you know, we live in this society where you have two sides that are just trying to yell the loudest in so many cases. And you see that in some of the talking heads news shows. And, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that there's no place for that, but I am saying that as far as what I'm trying to do, we are a guest in a classroom of middle and high school students. Sometimes it's older grades, sometimes it's younger, but we try to make it appropriate for a public school environment. And what's so paramount for us is A, to stay objective, not to push some sort of political agenda, social agenda. We're just trying to present what's happening. If there's a big controversy, what is this about? How can you understand what this is about if you don't regularly watch the news? And then, you know, as I said, if they have tools to be able to discuss this with a measure of civility, shoot, I mean, they're ahead of some of the people we're electing.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you're not wrong on that. And, you know, as we know, like, not all news is good news. So how do you handle delivering news on like a tough subject matter?
You know, that's a great question, because we don't want to, on The World from A to Z, we don't want to shy away from any of the big topics. We know that people are exposed to these topics, whether they want to be or not, through news, through media, through phones, through whatever, through Facebook news updates. I mean, so we want to give folks the tools they need to understand what's going on. However, we do that in a way, I like to say, we are as family friendly as the news allows. So while I don't want to shy away from topics like war in the Middle East, the war in Ukraine, if there's a terrorist attack, we don't want to avoid that coverage. But there are ways to tell a story that doesn't show some of the more violent images that you might see on a typical newscast. There are ways to tell a story that, you know, you can talk about, okay, how many people were killed in this event or injured? If this is a hurricane, how devastating is it for a community or a country? To do it in a way that's respectful of the fact that we are in public schools, we have a younger audience. I don't need to show graphic images like bodies. You can communicate a lot by showing, you know, damage to a house, damage to a landscape. If there is some sort of a violent gun attack, sometimes you can tell a story through showing the bullet holes through glass, every bit as effectively as you could tell it by showing something, you know, there's blood on the street or something like that. So we definitely want to respect the fact that we do have a younger audience. We want to respect the fact that we do have a mission to bring them the news, but to kind of blend those two things together in a way that presents it with respect to them, with respect to their teachers and their parents, is our goal. Now, I'm not saying I'm perfect at this or that we get it right every time. I'd never say that. But I do think that, you know, it's a more measured approach to some of the really heavier topics that are occurring, try to give students a sense of this is what's going on. This is why it's important. We're not trying to scare you. And if there is a silver lining, if there's something uplifting, if help is on the way, if everybody survived, if there's, you know, hope for this devastated part of the world or whatever it is, cover that too. Don't make it up, but cover that too in a way that says, look, action is being taken to solve this. I don't think, you know, when it comes to so many disasters, you know, a lot of times in news media, they'll bring in experts, sometimes psychologists, to explain that to people. And, you know, there's some controversies in the medical field. They'll bring in doctors to discuss it. And I think it's important too, if, you know, to discuss what we know and to discuss what we don't know. I don't think saying doctors don't know, scientists don't know, the government doesn't know, I don't think that's a position of weakness. I think that's a position of strength. And certainly as a news reporter, I mean, I'm just learning about a lot of this stuff right before I'm telling you about it. So sometimes I'll say, look, we don't know what caused this or how this happened, but what we can tell you, what can I find out? Action is being taken. Research is being conducted. Efforts are being made to bring things back to a peaceful state, a better state, whatever. If we can include that, I think it helps kind of alleviate some of the anxiety that the news itself can just bring.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people, especially teachers, appreciate that transparency because we're not experts in all that stuff either. So if a student has a question on it, like, oh, I really don't know the answer to that, but let me dig a little deeper and I'll get back to you on it, rather than just like making something up out of the blue, which could steer them in a different direction. So I think that's a very important thing that you guys are doing as well. To kind of go off of that, totally. having your own show now, what's been your favorite part of having the world from A to Z?
Well, I love being able to, you know, it's brand new. So I love being able to say, look, we are objective. We are strictly nonpartisan. When you're affiliated with a major media organization, and this isn't like pointing the finger at anybody, not CNN or Fox or ABC, NBC, CBS, none of those folks. But when you're affiliated with that network, you know, there are a lot of people who have preconceived notions about that network, its coverage, or how it handled one story. We loved it or we didn't love it or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And so we're independent media. So one thing I love about this show is it gives me the latitude, A, to hopefully glean the facts, B, present the facts objectively, and C, not have to dwell on something. If we've said everything there needs to be said about a specific event, we can move on. There's no pressure. There's no, well, you know, there's a wider company initiative, and so we would love to see you do this more. There's none of that. So we are able to hopefully treat stories how they should be treated without having to really push something or really, really push something that a broader network, any broader network, might have prioritized for that month or that event or that season. So I'm grateful for that. It allows me to have the freedom to be myself, which I love to do. I mean, it's not just a question of doing puns at the end of the newscast, although I absolutely love doing those. I say I'm pun-stoppable, but it's also, you know, when we do history topics, if we're not talking about something particularly heavy or particularly serious, sometimes I'll dress up. I mean, why not? Let's have some fun with it. It's history. Let's, you know, if we have a story about a sailor and I can don some, you know, I don't know, goofy conquistador look, or if I could, you know, go steal somebody's space helmet and superimpose myself on a bad green screen of a space background. Like, I love doing stuff like that, because as long as it's not disrespectful to the topic or that particular position in the show, we have the freedom to just kind of, I have the freedom to be myself. And I really enjoy that. I think it helps also lend interest to the show. I mean, you know, it keeps it dynamic. It's whatever, you know, creative juices might be flowing. Some days, of course, are far more creative than others. But it lets us kind of have a personality that breathes. So the important things are there in that you have objective coverage of world events. But then some of the personable things that, even if people like don't like me personally, they'll be like, well, still, I mean, it's a show that has a lot of personality, and I'm happy to bring that.
Yeah. And I think that's something that a lot of teachers and students appreciate as well, because it lets them, yeah, see that side of you and build that connection with you too. Throughout your show and everything like that. So I think it's very much appreciated. I definitely, appreciate it as a teacher, even though I teach second grade. It's still something that I appreciate as a teacher. So that's awesome.
Well, thank you for that. I mean, and it's part of me being authentically me. I mean, I think like there are a lot of people who come out of college and they're playing the role of news reporter. They've been taught a certain way. And now the news. You can see the accident behind me. I mean, like there are so many people who are playing this role, this part that they think a news reporter should look, act, or sound like. And one of the most valuable lessons I had was, look, be yourself. Sometimes you have to be a very engaged version of yourself. If there's a particular topic that you know isn't in your wheelhouse in terms of your interests or whatever, get engaged in that topic. Find something interesting that you can latch onto and communicate to others with energy. But I want to be me. And you know, I've found over the years of doing this, and I mean, like you mentioned when you and I first started speaking that you'd seen the show back, was it in seventh grade, Mrs. Schmidt's class? I mean, like, that's something to me that, you know, I think part of the reason you remember that is probably because of those horrible puns. And I mean, that's something that, you know, if we can continue doing that, there are people who've said to me over the years, yo, I don't even like the puns. And yet it's not the same without them. It's you. And I think there have been a few of those folks who've kind of eventually been won over or at least gotten to where they tolerate them. And so that's something that we love to expound on.
And when did you first get into journalism? Was it something that you always wanted to do from a young age, or was it something that just developed over time?
Developed over time. I mean, I used to tell people like they were like, when you were young, what'd you want to be? I was like a milkman, a pilot. There weren't milkmen back then, but I just loved the idea of like, here's that was an awesome job
End of the
back
hour.
in like the 1950s. But as far as like, you know, a pilot, a dentist, I had all kinds of different ideas. I thought for a while, oh, I'll go into international business because I saw this sweet commercial once about this dude who had like this awesome savvy business suit on and he's on a laptop and he's getting first class service and I'm just like that would be awesome. I knew nothing about business, but when I got to college I came to this place where I was like I wanted to work in a field and I love the idea of working in a field where you have a project and many people see that. I started gravitating toward broadcasting. The University of Georgia had a specific journalism major. They had a telecommunications major. And I went into telecommunications because I thought video and film production, sure, I'll work on movies. Everybody in college thinks they just waltz into the movie industry and make millions of dollars. But I like watching movies. A whole bunch of other people did. So we got into it for different reasons. But I loved the idea having a project that we could work on that many, many folks would see, people in places I'd never been. That was exciting to me. CNN was recruiting at the time I was getting ready to graduate. And, you know, I was thinking of two very different career paths, possibly graduate film school or the Navy. And two very, very different ways my life could have gone. And when CNN came recruiting, I'd been familiar with it since eighth grade when I first started watching CNN. And I was in a place where I was like, you know, I would love to get a job directly in this field, work for this company. And, you know, I got into news and I remember one of my professors telling me, he's like, news, he's like, it's a high test profession. It's a pay your dues profession. You'll either love it or you'll hate it. And I was in the former camp. I did love it. I did love working in, you know, a large organized international news company. And, you know, the more I did it, the more I enjoyed it. And so that's how I kind of found my way in. They recruited me out of college. I started 2 days after college graduation and went right into news from there. But no, it wasn't something I'd planned. In fact, being on air wasn't something I'd planned, despite the fact that I'd, you know, done some plays in high school and that sort of thing. But it was once I got in the news and I started working and I started, you know, being in this large news studio and so many cool things happening all at once. Tourists were coming through to watch us work. You know, you work somewhere cool when tourists are coming to watch you do it. There was an anchor named Brian Nelson who said to me, "Hey, have you ever thought about doing this?" And I was like, "Your job?" I was like, "I'm not as pretty as you, Brian." And he's like, "I think you could do it. I think, you know, I don't know." He saw maybe something in my personality or whatever that he thought could serve on air. And so that kind of planted the seed that took many, many years to bear fruit.
That's great though that you were able to, I mean, yeah, fresh out of college, just get right into it, which I mean, had to initially be one of those things where you're like, oh, geez, I'm really doing this. But then once you get into it and just seeing the rewards of that is really cool as well.
Absolutely. And I mean, when I came into CNN, it was, you know, it was still like privately owned. It was a very familial company. There are people who've been there since the beginning in 1980. They were called CNN Originals. And so here I am, this college kid right out of school, 2 days out of graduation. And I walk into this organization and I'm seeing, you know, news headlines, events, pictures coming in from all over the world, affiliates of CNN, not just CNN. I mean, Reuters, Associated Press, these affiliates. I'm seeing people shout across the room orders in terms of what we need to do to get this live shot. I'm seeing people argue about how to phrase a script. I mean, all of this is being thrown at me at this very exciting place that was CNN Center. And now the company's moved beyond that or moved away from it now. But at that time, it was an incredibly exciting place. And there were many, you know, really good lessons I learned starting out that would later help me in my current approach to news, to be able to, you know, kind of take these events and explain them to a younger audience. So I'm very grateful to have been able to have had that opportunity right out of school.
Yeah. And what's a piece of advice you'd give to students looking to go into a similar career path?
First of all, go into it with your eyes wide open. This is a pay your dues profession. Journalism, if you want to be on air, if you want to be behind the scenes, you don't start out making $100,000 out of college. Like many other professions, you work your way up, and those people you see at the top are few and far between. It's not just because they've been there 20 years that they suddenly get the network prime time anchoring slot. There are some folks who wind up really busting their butts on the, you know, maybe they're covering a trial, maybe they're on the campaign trail, whatever it is. And some of those people love it so much, they decide, you know what, I don't want the prime time slot. I want to stay in the field. I want to be a war correspondent, whatever. But it's very much, first and foremost, a pay your dues profession. You start often at the very bottom, as I did, and you start working your way up. It doesn't pay well to start, though there are opportunities in it. And one big thing I would suggest to anyone, and this probably can apply to other fields as well, but especially television journalism, have a broad skill set. Don't just learn how to do one thing. Don't just want to be a news writer and nothing else, or a news reporter and nothing else. If you know how to operate that camera and that's what gets your foot in the door and that's what gets you a job, you might be operating camera one day when the reporter gets stuck in traffic or gets stuck in, you know, can't make it, gets sick, whatever. And then you might be the person to step out in front of that camera. So the more skills you have, the more marketable you are and the more likely you are to get and keep a job. And that's, you know, obviously true in my career. I didn't just anchor CNN 10. I wrote it. I did writing for CNN Student News before I was on the air there. And now, I mean, I'm the executive producer of The World from A to Z. I'm also the writer and the host of it. So it's really having that varied skill set that has helped keep me employed these years.
Yeah, just kind of a jack of all trades, if you will, to get into that role. And it's almost like, not to relate everything to sports, but like almost like that starting player going down and you being that sixth man off the bench, being ready to fill that spot.
To have the positive attitude, the enthusiasm, the skill set. I mean, those are folks that people are looking for on the field and behind the camera and in many other places as well. So, no, I mean, it is a good analogy for sports as well. I mean, and it's true in so many different facets of journalism. And I don't think I'd be doing what I'm doing today if I couldn't write and if I couldn't produce. In fact, I certainly wouldn't be doing it in the capacity I am now. So many of the things you learn along the way can help you. And so many of the people you meet along the way can help you. And that underscores the importance of being able to relate to people, being able to get along with people, to kind of, you know, put pride aside and to be able to work with folks of all different stripes from all different backgrounds and socioeconomic histories and all of that stuff. Because so often in this field, as you see in sports, you're on a team of folks from all over the place, people with very different perspectives on life and the country and politics and all of that fun stuff that we argue about daily. And so to be able to get along with those folks, shoot, I mean, 5 years from now, you might be on a team with that one person you never thought you could sit next to on the bench again. And you know, so I mean, it's so important to be able to get along and to have that community and to be able to work with others. I think that And some of the messages we hear today, that's lost. And so many people are being told, you do you and you be you and you keep it real and stay true to yourself no matter what. And if people don't like it, well, that's on them and forget about them. And my perspective on it, having worked for, you know, a couple different organizations now, is look, let's practice humility and let's practice helping and serving others, because you have no idea what's going to eventually happen in your career or what's going to help you succeed in that career. And the more folks that you've gotten along with and worked well with, the better chance you have of keeping it going.
Definitely. And I think that's kind of goes back to starting in the classroom, you know, with those civil conversations, everything like that, and being able to work together with one another. And then as you get older, being able to still have those constructive conversations and things like that, even though you might disagree with those people, it's leaning back on that, maybe that grade school education of, oh, okay, this person thinks differently than me, but I'm not going to let that get in the way of accomplishing our goal together.
Absolutely. The relationships that some of your students have and will develop, it's so important for them to see that they could be best friends with someone who totally disagrees with them on an important topic. I mean, like, I remember we covered the story for a while about Antonin Scalia and Ruth Bader Ginsburg, two people who had very different interpretations of the Constitution and very different visions for what the country should look like. And yet, you know, it's widely said they were friends. It wasn't just that they got along. They would travel together. These folks were tight. They respected each other, despite the fact that they had these extreme ideological differences. Increasingly in America today, we see people who are like, first of all, tell me what side you're on so I can decide whether you're friend or foe. I mean, people are, they're so dug in, and they're looking to judge you and judge your life based on how you voted, or what your perspective is on a hot button social issue. But again, I mean, if we can start in the classroom with these civil conversations and with people saying, look, you know, you don't share my opinion, but I can still get on with you. If we can have more of those sort of Ginsburg Scalia friendships in this country, I think it would certainly help things move forward in the spirit of compromise and in the spirit of cooperation. And obviously, I mean, you're seeing that directly in your classroom. It's got to happen on the sports field, because if you have a divided team, it's doomed. And so that's, you know, kind of the perspective that we try to bring to our show. It's not this comprehensive, in-depth 60 minutes portrayal, but it is hopefully something that can give you as a teacher a jumping off point to have these civil discussions with different opinions being voiced and nobody being attacked.
Definitely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you there, Carl. And I appreciate everything that you're doing at the World from A to Z. Looks like we have about a little bit of time left here. And I got some questions that I need to ask you. So let's say you just finished making an episode of your show. What's your go-to snack afterwards? People want to know.
I'm a popcorn fanatic, man. My wife got me a few years ago a Whirly Pop. And I'm amazed it's still working. Not because it's not well made. It is well made, because I use it a lot. I try different oils and all kinds of stuff. For me, it's like I could eat popcorn in the middle of the night. I could eat popcorn for dessert. So, yeah, absolutely crazy about that's a safe bet.
All about that popcorn life. I love it.
Yes, sir.
So I'm from Wisconsin. That's why, hence the northern Wisconsin. Have you ever been to Wisconsin?
I have not. I've been to northern Michigan. I think that's the closest I've been, not the UP, but I was, I spoke at a graduation at Petoskey High School in Petoskey, Michigan. And I think that's the closest I've been to Wisconsin. I have not been, and I understand the fall there is breathtaking. And so I would love to see it, though. I don't know if I'm tough enough for like February.
I was going to say, we have a really cool event that happens here in February. It's the American Birkebeiner. It's one of the largest ski races in North America. People mm-hmm. from all different countries come and ski it. There's like 15,000 skiers that come to our small town of roughly 2,000 people. Oh, wow. So it just like increases our population to like, I don't know, with including spectators and everything, it's like 30 to 35,000 people. So it's definitely a really cool event. If you're looking to add anything to your bucket list, I would recommend coming for that.
I'd love to come cover it. I mean, like, you have such a good starting point, like town population 2,000 suddenly explodes to 30,000. Where are people eating, sleeping? Is it like an incredibly stressful yet profitable time for local businesses? You're looking at an economic impact. And then, of course, sports, baby. I mean, like, if you have folks from all over the world coming to compete in this ski event, I mean, like, I think that would be fun to just, slice of life that maybe not everybody's as aware of as they are about, championships in Vail, and yet something that's still attracting international attention. I love it.
Yeah, it's great. We had so going to like the how where people stay and everything like that. My mom, she would just get in touch with the Chamber of Commerce and say like, "Hey, if anybody needs a place to stay, they can come stay at our house." We had like three elderly guys from Japan stay at our house when I was in middle school, and just to experience different cultures was just amazing. Like, especially in our small town and everything like that. Like, you'd never think it would be an international event, but it's like our small town Olympics. It's really amazing.
See, that's wonderful. And I mean, it's great for you as a kid to see that, to meet people from, different parts of the globe. And I mean, I love hearing about stuff like that. I think that's fantastic. And that was one thing I took away from Petoskey was, I mean, I was there, I think it was June 1st. And I remember that because it was in the high 30s on the morning of June 1st, which for a Georgia boy is absolutely unheard of. But one of the things that I remember from that trip was they said, our town, its population like increases, I don't know what the number was, tenfold in the summer, where so many folks go to holiday homes or they'll sail over from wherever. And I mean, I think that that's a fascinating sort of study in and of itself about a place that how do you handle that many people and that much attention? And I guess you guys have probably gotten to a point now where you're able to prepare at least a little bit for it in terms of folks like your mom hosting people in her own home, opening up her doors to people. But what a wonderful experience for kids too, because sometimes we can be so isolated, whether you're in a small town or a big city. What a wonderful thing to kind of open your doors figuratively and literally to people from all over for an event like that.
Yeah, it's a ton of fun. And we also just had like the Lumberjack World Championships here too. So we really, really try to hit up all that kind of different things.
Those man, and that when I see news stories on that, like right now, my schedule wouldn't allow me to come up there and cover it when we're on the air. But that
Right.
said, when the news stories about events like that feed, I love covering them, and I love to show students, look, sports, it's not just baseball, basketball, football. I mean, like, when you have, there are many different forms of athletics, and some of those, the lumberjack competitions, when it comes to log rolling, the sense of balance that takes, when it comes to scaling poles and trees and things like that. I mean, that takes real muscle, real balance, real coordination. I love showing that because it's kind of a, an outside the box sporting event, and folks tend to respond, really well to seeing that.
Yeah, definitely. We're gonna try to, yeah. Here's the push right now to get in the Olympics for LA in 2028. This is
Oh man,
campaign.
that's fantastic. Yeah, keep that going. They're adding a Olymp. Hey, they add events. In
Yeah, I was
every
gonna say.
Olympics, there's like something special they have. So I don't know, how many lumberjacks around LA are going to help you. So
No.
it might be an uphill push, but all the same, I mean, is it an Olympic worthy sport? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. For sure. So Carl, how can teachers and students find your show?
I would love to have y'all come on over to worldatoz.org. If you Google Carl Azuz World AZ, you'll find it. But worldatoz.org is where we post every show we've done. Folks can sign up for our daily email there if they want just a preview of what's coming. But you don't have to sign up for anything to get the show. It's totally free. And you can also find us at youtube.com/theworldatoz. You need that at in there. That's another place where folks can find our show, or again, go to YouTube and search Carl Azuz World A to Z, and the channel will come up. But we would love to hear what people think of the show. You're welcome to tweet me at Carl Azuz. But I love getting opinions, getting feedback. As I said, I mean, I'm by no means perfect at anything I do, and so I welcome feedback. I welcome constructive criticism, suggestions for coverage, all of that stuff. I love hearing from people. And so I would love for folks to, if you're not familiar with the show, if you're not familiar with me, take a few minutes, like 9 or 10, watch it, and then come on back to me. Tell me what you think and what we can do better. And we're listening.
Awesome. Well, Yeah, I appreciate you taking the time to come on the podcast and everything like that and talk about your show and just talk a little bit about your background and everything like that. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me on. A meeting of two nerds has been so much fun to have. Good luck to you. God bless you. And thank you for what you're doing, interviewing a variety of folks from a variety of walks of life and encouraging civil discussion through your podcast, The Northern Nerd.
Thanks, Carl. Take care. Have a good rest of your summer.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks so much.
Thanks for tuning in to the latest episode of the Northern Nerd Podcast. Feel free to like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, and subscribe to us on Apple Music and Spotify Music so you know when our latest episode of the Northern Nerd Podcast is coming out. That about does it for us, so continue to be kind to one another, and we'll see you around town.